The sun's rising over America. Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Let's get rolling. Call 866-680-6464. Atlantic to Pacific, north to south, across the globe. It's Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett this morning. It's 8 a.m. here on the East Coast, 5 a.m. if you're in Spokane, Washington, and it is my great joy to welcome to the program a great friend of the show. It's Charles Murray, the F.H. Brady Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and the author of many fine books, including most recently, The Curmudgeon's Guide to Getting Ahead. I love that title. Good morning, Charles. How are you today?
Good morning, Steve. How about you? I'm great.
Well, I'm good because I've had my coffee and, the crew here gets me energized. I wanted to have you on to talk about several things, most especially the article you wrote last week in the Wall Street Journal that went by the headline, "The Trouble Isn't Liberals, It's Progressives." And, you know, one of the startling things you write, I think it's startling for many of our listeners, that you write in the article, which, by the way, tracks very closely with my own thinking on a lot of matters, is you say, and let me get the quote exactly right here, "We should start using liberal to designate the good guys on the left." A number of our listeners will say, wait a minute, I'm not sure there are any good guys on the left. But for people who either didn't read the article or have forgotten it from last week, I wonder if you could start by defining what you mean by a liberal and a progressive and what the difference is.
Well, I'm using progressive in its original meaning back in the beginning of the 20th century. And at that time, we think of progressives as being, you know, the muckrakers and the people who exposed corruption in government and so forth. And that was part of it. But there was also this intellectual tradition, of which Woodrow Wilson was an early adopter, which was fascinated by the idea of the expert running things, a strong, unified leader, the importance of the collective. And by the way, Steve, they were completely dismissive of the Constitution and these outdated, outmoded 18th century conceptions of individual rights. Well, that tradition, by the way, our mutual friend Jonah Goldberg describes this beautifully in Liberal Fascism. But this tradition is being picked up again under the Obama administration, especially whereby these people that want to shut down free speech, that say we will change the laws unilaterally by the executive branch, you know, all these other things, this is new. There is another tradition of liberalism that was exemplified by Truman, and for that matter by Johnson and by Clinton, which I don't agree with, you don't agree with philosophically, but these people aren't evil. You know, they're still in tune with a lot of the same love for the American heritage that you and I have.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of interested to learn over the years about Walter Mondale. I mean, remember that guy from the 80s? I mean, you could hardly find a better specimen of old New Deal liberal, Great Society liberalism than him. And he kind of sort of became the captive of a lot of the Democratic Party interest groups. But that raises the problem is whether liberals have surrendered willy-nilly to the progressive element. I mean, I wonder if this is, as a practical matter, a distinction without a difference.
Well, you know, Steve, I think in some ways it's our job to save the good guys from themselves.
Ah.
Because what they're doing now is none of them will speak out. Against this, none of them will distinguish themselves from the progressives, from the Obama crowd, and here's my view of it. I don't care whether they're willing to distinguish themselves. I'm going to start distinguishing them in the way I talk about them, in the way, for that matter, in which I interact with them. When I express my criticisms, I'm going to focus them on the progressives, because I think until conservatives start to realize that there are millions of people who vote Democratic who are much more sympathetic to a lot of our issues than they will even admit to themselves, the Republican Party is going to have a hard time in a lot of ways. There is a real potential for progress. Now, in saying that, Steve, I understand a lot of listeners are saying I'm dancing with the devil. I think the distinction between progressive and liberal is real.
Yeah, you know, something you said reminded me of an axiom of our mutual friend Harvey Mansfield up at Harvard. You actually mentioned at the beginning of your article that conservatism has all these factions and we argue with each other in public about all kinds of things. And so it makes it harder to define what a conservative is. Harvey doesn't even try, but he says this, which tracks with what you just said. The job of conservatism is to save liberalism from liberals. I really like that, right? I think we should put that on a bumper sticker.
I'm just going to reword that. We should save liberals from liberalism from progressives.
Right, right. But, I mean, a good example of the difficulty that I'm trying to press you on is, you know, Hillary Clinton, when she was gearing up to run for president back around 2007, 2008, she said, "I'm not a liberal. I'm a progressive."
And I know.
Right. And, you know, part of that was maybe we're a victim of our own success, right? You think back again to the, because we're old guys, right? Think back to the 1988 presidential campaign, and there was poor Michael Dukakis trying to deny that he was a liberal, right?
Liberal became a really bad word in the 70s and 80s.
Exactly. And now suddenly you're saying we should I kind of agree that we should rehabilitate it some.
They went to progressive because they were so getting so demonized for saying that they were liberals.
Yeah.
So they picked up progressive, and so Bill Clinton was talking about himself as a progressive because they were just trying to escape from the word liberal.
Right.
The word progressive has a real meaning that you and I understand that I think we ought to bring up front and center again.
Don't we also have to not only rehabilitate and make alliances with decent liberals, don't we also need to contest the left for the meaning of progress and for what progressive ought to be rightly understood?
However, if you think about it for a minute, words like socialism, and for that matter, communism, if you go back to their original meaning, you know, what could be wrong with social? We're putting ism on the end of it. So progressivism is progress is a positive term, but so were a lot of these other terms. No, I'm ready to make progressive into a word as pejorative as welfare is.
Or social engineering, right?
Or social engineering,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Let me shift gears a little bit. We had this Hobby Lobby decision last week, which prompted hysterical reaction from the left and from progressives. And I've noticed something else I want to bring up that concerns you. I've noticed there has been a revival of the hysteria over the bell curve. That's a book that's almost 20 years old now. Do you have any, I don't know if you're following it closely or not, because I know you concentrate on your next project, but have you been, do you have a sort of a field theory of why this is happening, either in particular or in a larger scheme of why things like Hobby Lobby cause the left to seemingly lose its mind?
I wish I did, because what are we talking about with Hobby Lobby? We are talking about contraception. You know, if you were talking about not having a health benefit that costs tens of thousands of dollars, then I could see maybe the hysteria, but not having your contraception paid for? I mean, it's substantively trivial. And also the idea, of course, for people like you and me that an employer should be compelled to do that is wrong on first principles. But you're right, there is a level of intensity. And okay, I'll give you my speculative explanation. There is a sense that things are slipping away, I think, from the far left. And in the case of the bell curve, I'll tell you what's slipping away is all the new findings on neuroscience and genetics. Now, I will say the bell curve was not about genetics, but everybody thinks it was. And an awful lot of what's gone on in genetics since the genome was decoded is preliminary to undercutting the cornerstones of a lot of political correctness. I think there's a certain amount of panic that's setting in among people on the left.
Yeah, that turns out to be exactly what I think is behind all this. I'd rephrase it this way. There is frustration.
Great minds think alike, right, Steve?
Well, I'll go with that. My version of it could go something like this. It's people on the left are frustrated that we're all not bowing down before Obama, the light worker, you know, the miracle worker, right? This godlike figure. I think that's one version of all this. Well, we have about 30 seconds left. How's the Curmudgeon's Guide doing? I mean, it's a wonderful title. I have friends who are saying they're giving it away left and right.
I'm afraid more curmudgeons are reading it than 20-somethings. As you know, that was a book that I had a great time writing. And I actually think that 20-somethings, could profit from it. Not in terms of me being a geezer, but from in terms of me being a geezer who tells them what people like me are thinking and helps them to avoid some traps.
Right. Well, one thing I know is that you're young at heart. You know, we've spent some time together. Stick around with us through the break if you can, Charles. I've got a couple more questions and comments, and I expect we'll get a call or two about some of the themes we've laid out here. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett on Morning in America. Don't go away. We will be right back in a moment.
Compelling, intriguing talk on Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Welcome back. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett this morning, and we're continuing our conversation with Charles Murray, author of this long list of indispensable books. And Charles, I want to go back again to the central question of liberals versus progressives, and I keep looking for signs that liberals will stand up to the radical and irresponsible progressive left. And here and there, it happens once in a while. But generally, they seem to lack courage, it seems to me, especially on college campuses where the radicals run roughshod and, you know, gin up protests against commencement speakers. And I can tell lots of war stories. A lot of them are in the press. I guess the question is, why do liberals lack courage? And do you have one or two specific ideas how we might buck them up?
Well, I'll tell you, a disaster this fall for the Democrats might help.
Ah, right.
Because at some point, politicians, I'm talking about practicing politicians now, they have to distinguish themselves from the Obama crowd if things get bad enough. And that could still continue into 2016. But your larger question baffles me. I have had conversations with some of the good guys, with people who are definitely liberal, but are the kind of liberal that shares a lot with conservatives in terms of what they think of the United States. But they just sort of say, as if they're helpless, well, there are certain things we can't say in our circles. Well, why can't you say them?
Right.
And I guess it is that throughout the left, the idea of agreeing with a Republican on anything is simply not in the cards. Look, I will take my own children, who are by no means, rebelling against their dad. They're actually agree with a whole bunch of stuff that I believe on free economies and the rest of that. They are so anti-conservative because of the social issues that they will do nothing that in any way identifies them with the right. That is a problem.
You know, an interesting thing happened to me out in Boulder where I was trying to practice what you're preaching here, which is I made a point of trying to befriend some professors on the left who were nonetheless not postmodernists who think there's no such thing as rationality and objectivity, right? These are people mm-hmm. still on planet
right.
Earth. And, you know, what I say, by the way, to the really radical postmodernists is, not only why are we having this conversation, but how are we having this conversation? So a funny thing happened. I came to the defense of the philosophy department, which is mostly left liberals to pretty radical. But as I say, still on planet Earth in the ordinary way, they believe in objectivity and truth and reason. And I suddenly was their hero. And then when I got attacked for hate speech, that's a long and amusing story. They all sent me notes privately saying, this is outrageous. You shouldn't be treated this way. And to make a long story short, I started asking them, well, why don't you stand up to these people on campus? And you would get shrugs and mumbles, and really what it boiled down to was, it's just too much trouble. And that's very discouraging, I think.
I resist saying that people on the left are cowards because come on, I really dislike this idea of demonizing our political opponents.
Yeah.
I will say more in sorrow than in anger that I have seen so little courage, so little moral and intellectual courage fighting back against the fascists and the totalitarians. And if those are strong words, an awful lot of what's going on the far left is fascist and totalitarian. Why it's... I don't know. I really don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope you're right about an election beating. You know, what I think, by the way, is, I mean, you don't want to think too far ahead, but I think the frustration of the left is going to mean there's going to be a challenger to Hillary Clinton from the far left, like Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, right now,
wouldn't that be wonderful?
Absolutely. Bring it on. I think that would be huge fun to watch. I'll sell popcorn or buy popcorn, whatever I'm supposed to do in that situation. It'd be really fun. We're down
and
to buy.
It would be nice.
Go ahead.
It would be nice at that point if we had a Republican candidate who could speak across the lines, who comes across as a Ronald Reagan,
yeah,
in terms of philosophy, but as a person in terms of personality,
right,
who's perfectly happy to go out and have a drink with a Democrat.
Right. You can't beat something with nothing is an old rule I have. Charles, we're sadly out of time. Thanks very much for joining us. Good luck. We've been talking with Charles Murray, and we're going to join together and form an alliance to try and save the left from itself. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett. We'll be back after this break.